So welcome to the Dharma Talk. The theme today is emptiness and peace. Emptiness, shunyata, emptiness and peace. Emptiness is a very difficult topic. And somebody also warned me, Radha, do not speak about peace in Israel. But I dare, so here we go. I want to begin with the Buddha's statement. So I'll take a piece of text. It's a little weighty and difficult. So I'll endeavor to unpack it with some stories, some poems, and I guess my own understanding. The Buddha says, this is peace. This is exquisite. The resolution of all fabrications. The relinquishment of all acquisitions. So the letting go of all that we acquire or want to possess, the ending of craving, dispassion, so we're dispassionate when we're not attached to something, we're not swept along by our attractions or aversions. It doesn't mean that we're indifferent, but just rather steady in the face of our attractions and aversions, our likes and dislikes. So. It goes, the ending of craving, dispassion, cessation, nibbana. Cessation means the endings of all things, the ending of clinging, the ending of our sorrow, the ending of our fear, the ending of our attachments. So when we see this cessation, That which is revealed is nibbana, our freedom. I'll read it again. This is peace. This is exquisite. The resolution of all fabrications. The relinquishment of all acquisitions. The ending of craving. Dispassion. Dispassion. Cessation. Nibbana. So let's try to relate this to our everyday experience. Over the past few days here, there have been lots of directions about seeing into the nature of the immediacy of our direct experience through the different postures, as we stand, as we walk, as we recline, as we do all of the activities of the day. When we really just sit, just stand or just walk, without the additional invention of the one who is the walker, the one who is standing, the meditator, the one who is sitting, when we really just act, if you like, without any notion of there being somebody standing behind all the activities, we get a sense of how to be in this world without clinging to me and my. This is to see and experience life rather directly without it being filtered through the standpoint of self, through the me. Because when we look from a standpoint, we get entangled in our identity, we get entangled in our desires, we get entangled in our thinking world, we get swept along by our views, opinions, ideas, and we're so swept along by this tide of conceiving that we don't see the actual reality. We see instead in a rather dualistic way. We see that this is myself and there is the other. To understand the Dharma, we need to realize the end of this duality, to give up dualistic thinking, to give up the divisive way that we see the world. And of course, the division extends not to just me and you, but it extends to the nation, it extends to religions, it extends to all the kinds of issues and boundaries we have in this world. So the division, of course, and seeing bound to division breeds fear. The fear of the unknown, the fear of the other, the fear of the one who is different from me, the fear of the one with a different background, a different religion, a different culture. So we need to be with our direct experience and really look with fine attention, not being fooled by our habitual ways of thinking and being, not making an error about how we see. So our freedom dawns when we recognize the inherent emptiness of this self and all things. So by emptiness, we don't mean something bleak. We don't mean something that's vacuous or an absence of everything. That is not the meaning of emptiness. It's empty of clinging. It's empty of intrinsic self-existence, is the statement. So it's empty of any kind of self. To describe this, the Buddha gave the example of a chariot. He said, if you take the chariot apart, perhaps we'll use a car. Because I know. We'll use a car because I'm not sure what the bits of a chariot actually are. So, we'll take a car. And if we pull apart the car, there's the wheels and the bonnet and the windows and the steering wheel and the glove box. And none of these bits of the car are actually car. There is no self-existent car-ness that exists by itself. So we tend to make assumptions about reality that aren't quite true. Hang in, it'll get easier this talk, I hope. So our language itself tends to reinforce this statement. We say, I am breathing, I am walking, instead of, there's walking, there's the breath. So we need to see, the philosopher Wittgenstein said, the sense of a separate self is only a shadow cast by grammar. Now, I really do wish it were that simple, but I don't think so, because I think our habit of mind is, of course, to directly experience the world through the veil of the discrete sense of self. It's an assumption that we make. So our practice, we have to be very attentive, very wakeful about what's actually going on in our own mind as we experience things in the world. And I want to read you a little bit from Guy Armstrong's book on emptiness. It's a very good book. He says this: it's important to understand that the truth of not-self, or the emptiness of self, does not deny individuality. When you realize not-self in a transformative way, it does not mean that you merge with the cosmos and then live in a state of perpetual oneness with all things, with all personality washed away into a bland nothingness. That would be a total misunderstanding. Nisargadatta Maharaj had a good explanation of this. Nisargadatta Maharaj was one of the great Advaita teachers of India in the last century. And this is how he explains this experience that we have and what it means. He says, when the I am myself goes, and we've seen and heard in the inquiries of how sometimes the sense of I and me recedes into the background, it fades, it's not so strong anymore. And some of you, of course, have had wonderful experiences of the complete cessation of clinging to I. The dissolution of the self can be known, and it's not such an uncommon experience. When the I am myself goes, the I am all comes. So of course, then we think, oh, we are the moon, the stars, the trees, we are everything. And this too is a beautiful experience. But then he says, we keep on looking. When the I am all goes, I am comes. In Advaita, there's a way of speaking which says, I am that. I am, just simply I am. Let's leave it there. When I am goes, reality alone is, and in it, every I am is preserved and glorified. Diversity without separateness is the ultimate the mind can touch. So, I'll read you Guy's explanation because it's quite good. He says, when we stop conceiving of ourselves as I am something, then an experience of oneness may come. We don't have to have an experience of oneness, we just do sometimes. When the experience of oneness fades, there's still a sense of individuality, I am. When even that fades, there's only what is. And in that is still found every individual existence. The maturity of the insight into not-self is to see the uniqueness in individual existence, but without the sense of separation created by concepts of self and other. So we are not deleting the self or cancelling out the self. We are simply negating a misunderstanding about the self and the way it comes into being. That's all. So let's go back to the statement. The resolution of all fabrications. It means sometimes we can experience the dissolution of clinging to anything. We see that which is not put together with the mind. It's unformed, it's unconstructed. And when we just touch this unconstructed, this sense of the unformed, and it's not so difficult to do, when we just touch into that, it can just shift our way of seeing from the standpoint of self to something else, a different way of approaching the world. But it's not cold, it's not empty. Emptiness is an unfortunate term, and it is difficult to understand, but once you understand it, through meditation practice, it will be completely clear. In the inquiries and the instructions, we've directly seen the release from the held fear, the anger, the jealousy, and the loosening up of the clinging. So this is our practice. We see the self is impermanent, it's empty of any substantial existence. And the difficult emotions of life, our loneliness, our fear, our anger, are only kept in place when we have or assume a separate identity that's me or you. And when we do this, of course, it keeps our suffering in place and brings no peace. So the poet Lala from the 14th century, she was a mystic in Kashmir, and she sang and danced naked. And there's some wonderful poetry. In India, the nakedness of the sadhu or the spiritual seeker represents purity of the mind. And so she was quite an incredible woman, as you can imagine, in the 14th century, singing and dancing naked. But this is one of her poems. If you want a kingdom and get it, you'll have no peace. If you give it away, still you won't be content. Only a soul free of desire can taste eternity. Be living yet dead, then knowing will come to live in you. So she's speaking about the end of desire, the giving up of all desire. If we try to accumulate things, it won't make us happy. If we give everything away, it won't necessarily make us happy either. When she says, be living yet dead, she's talking about the death of the ego, the death of the me. Then knowing will come to live in you. So be living, yet know the death of the problematic, the death of the difficult, the death of the fear, the death of the anger, the death of the jealousy, the death of the loneliness. This is our practice. So by emptiness, we mean, and here's a little definition, there's no fixed existent inherent nature or essence. Emptiness is also empty. The mind likes to cling to anything, and so when we hear the word emptiness as a description, what we think of is a thing, a noun. And so then we, with the mind, try to cling to that. And those who cling to emptiness, Nagarjuna says, are incurable. So please don't cling to this notion or idea or construct of emptiness either. It simply means lack of inherent existence. Thailand's great teacher of emptiness, Ajahn Buddhadasa, one of my teachers, said this, in the most fundamental sense, emptiness simply means emptiness of the attachment to me and mine. He goes on to say that the mind will simply be a mind in its natural state, free from attachment and ignorance, because it has seen the emptiness of all things. So simply put, give up clinging to me and mine, and then you will see. And what do you see? You see the mind in its natural state, which is a mind and heart that's naturally free and unbound. Now, I want to also try to clarify or clear up a view that many people have in the spiritual world. And a view I often hear in the Advaita tradition, the non-dual tradition of India, is that the world is an illusion. Okay. There is a sense in which this is correct, and that's what I'm going to speak about now. However, this is so misunderstood. People go around going, oh, everything's an illusion, so therefore it doesn't matter what I do. I can do anything I like, nothing matters anyway. I'm just floating around non-doing. And this is a total misunderstanding. It's, as far as I'm concerned, it's completely out of touch, because the Buddha speaks about liberation and freedom, not only in an ultimate way, but also conventionally. We have to find and know and understand our freedom in this world. Everything we see is an appearance in consciousness, Guy says, a production conditioned and limited by our sense doors and consciousness. This is the magic show. To say that it is an illusion is not to say that nothing exists. Of course things exist. It is to say that we have misunderstood the way in which things exist. The things of our human experience, the totality that Buddhism is interested in, exist as appearances in consciousness. The appearances are not solid. They are void, hollow, and insubstantial, like a magic show. Now, the Buddha also used this kind of description. He said, knowing this body is like foam, so like just like bubbles, fully awake to its mirage-like nature. And he says, cutting off Mara's flowers, one goes unseen by the king of death. So Mara is a demon that represents all the unwholesome mind states. So anger, doubt, fear, temptation, and so on. So the Buddha says, when we see into this, when we see the falsity of this, when we see the emptiness of all things, then the unwholesome mind states no longer bother us. They no longer colour consciousness. We give them up. We let go of them. So this is the teaching, letting go of everything. And now I'm going to come to a story, because sometimes it's actually easier to understand the Dharma through the actuality of stories. When I was here a couple of years ago, there was, on the retreat, a Palestinian woman. She was actually here for the last retreat. And I find her to be completely delightful. When she was first here, she was afraid that somebody might recognize her and know that she was Palestinian. So she asked that we not mention this in the hall. However, what happened for her on the retreat was quite extraordinary, and I have permission to share it. She said, Radha, I'm Palestinian. I'm sitting in a hall full of Israelis. She said, I have been shot by these people. Obviously not the people in the hall, but the Israeli Defense Force. She said, I have been shot by these people. I have been imprisoned. I've been held in solitary confinement. But she said, I love this Dharma. I love these people. These people are my brothers and sisters. She said, they are my family. And I love them. I found it extraordinary. It was very, very touching and moving. So what she had seen? She had seen the emptiness of clinging to her identity. I am Palestinian. I am an Arab. And of course, she had seen the emptiness of the other. They are Israeli, they are Jewish, and so on. So this is what we need to see. We need to see that which we cling to as me, as self. With the dissolution of clinging to this, there's the meeting of hearts. There's peace. This is what the Buddha is talking about. We let go of self. We let go of clinging to our background, our culture, our identity. Not that our culture is a bad thing and we have to not express it or anything, but just the holding to it that brings division. The holding to it that generates conflict is what's problematic. So she saw in the letting go that there was just incredible love for all of you, as it is. And she came back again in this last retreat. And again, her understanding and commitment to the Dharma has deepened and deepened. And she said, Radha, I don't even see gender. Even gender is gone. So even holding on to the idea, I am a woman, I am a man, can cease, can go. And then there is just the meeting with the other. There's the seeing of the differenceless reality. The seeing the non-difference. Seeing our humanity. Understanding that when we let go of all concepts, something else is revealed. And this is the Buddha's teaching of the Dharma. This is what is meant. This by peace. We let go. When we let go of all of this, it is the end of conflict. And it's the knowing of one another. It's the meeting that we can have that is precious as human beings. We'll come to a Rumi poem now. Rumi says this. He says, die, die, die in this love. So when we let go of self, when we see the emptiness of self, the expression of that understanding is love, it's connection. If you die in this love, your soul will be renewed. Die, die, don't fear the death of that which is known. If you die to the temporal, so die to time, you will be timeless. Die, die, cut off those chains that hold you prisoner to the world of attachment. Die, die, die to the deathless, and you will be eternal. Die, come out of the cloud. When you leave the cloud, you will be the shining moon. Die, die, die to the din and noise of mundane concerns. In the silence of love, you will find the spark of life. So sometimes the poets can just touch something else in us. Several years ago in Australia, a family experienced an utter tragedy. A family from Western Australia, the western part of Australia, were holidaying in the Netherlands. a mother, father, grandfather, and children, three children. The parents decided to stay for a few days in the Netherlands, and the children travelled back to Australia with the grandfather. Unfortunately, they were on the Malaysian airline flight, MH17, that was shot down over Ukraine territory. And so all of the children died, just like that, and the grandfather. So the parents had lost their entire family in just those dreadful moments. But what is so remarkable about this is that from the tragedy came the most extraordinary letter that was published in Australian newspapers that I think I've ever read. They wrote a letter and they said, "Message to the soldiers in Ukraine, the politicians, the media and friends and family." This is what they said. And these people weren't meditators or peace activists, just ordinary people. "Our pain is intense and relentless. We live in a hell beyond hell. Our babies are not here with us. We need to live with this act of horror every day and every moment for the rest of our lives. No one deserves what we're going through. Not even the people who shot our whole family out of the sky." And then they say this, which I find so touching. "No hate in the world is as strong as the love we have for our children, for Mo, for Evie, for Otis. No hate in the world is as strong as the love we have for our granddad, Nick. No hate in the world is as strong as the love we have for each other. This is a revelation that gives us some comfort. We would ask everyone to remember this when you are making any decisions that affect us and the other victims of this horror." And just a while ago, they gave birth to another child, which I think to have another child when that has happened is an extraordinary thing to do, an extraordinary act of trust. They said this, "We will continue to love all four of our children equally." Brilliant. "Violet, the new little girl, brings some hope and joy for us. We hope she brings hope and joy for you too." So this unspeakable horror, the kind of horror that's going on throughout this region every single day, and throughout other regions in the world. From this act of horror, this situation that it's just terrible. I have children, I can't imagine losing them all at once. Came this incredible wisdom. So it's their wisdom to face what's happened. So this is the depth of wisdom that we need in our life. We need to face death, grief, loss, and yet know that there's a depth of inspiration and love that is greater than any loss. In a sense, what they're saying is, in spite of the loss of that which was most precious to us, we know and can touch into a love that can never be lost. This is the deathless teaching of the Buddha. We need to discover and know for ourselves that which can't be lost. This is the only security there is in this world. And the Buddha says it this way. He says, having nothing, clinging to nothing, that is the island. There is no other. That is nibbana, I tell you. The total ending of aging and death. So the self is empty of any inherent existence. And I want to clarify a few points about this notion of emptiness, because it's difficult to understand. The Dharma teaches us actually that there is no essence, no self-existence. Also, emptiness is not like a background from which all things emerge. Emptiness does not exist on its own either. It too is empty. Emptiness is not just awareness, and it's also not the absence of thought. Some people mistakenly think that when thoughts cease, that's emptiness. That is just the absence of thought, and that is not what's meant by this term emptiness in the way that it's used in the Dharma teachings. It's also not just the quietness of mind. And it's not a core reality that's somewhere at the heart of the universe from which all diversity arises. So, emptiness is when it's seen and known, is liberating and freeing. So, first of all, we see the emptiness of self. We see the emptiness that's revealed, or the emptiness of all things that's revealed when we cease clinging to anything, when we don't cling to ourself, when we don't cling to other. When we don't cling to our desires. When we can be with our experience dispassionately. So without consciousness being thrown about. So with equanimity. This is when we understand. This is when we see. And then we see the cessation of our suffering. With the cessation of our clinging comes the cessation of any notion or idea about becoming somebody or something. And another story. This is a story from a couple of retreats ago in Australia. And I was reminded of it last night. One of the participants in the retreat had been a soldier in East Timor. He joined the army, the Australian army, when he was about 18 or 19 years old, and he'd been trained as a sniper. He was, he said, very good at it. He was a marksman. He was trained to shoot to kill. Shoot to kill. He was a sniper. We need a translation? Yeah. And so he was in East Timor, and he said, in his role in the army, he'd been praised, won some accolades, he'd been good at his job, and so he'd been elevated. So he was the leader of a group of people, soldiers, who were given the task of maintaining the border, the central border between East Timor and Indonesia. And as I said in the talk the other day, there were truckloads and carloads of young men, some soldiers, some not, coming across the border. And he was told that not to fire upon anyone unless he was fired upon. So he wasn't to initiate any combat. And so he completely understood that. However, there he was on the border and he had his men with him, group of men. And of course, some people came and there was shooting. And so he said, without really thinking, he aimed and he fired. And of course, killed a young man. In this experience, he said, the moment before the young man died, he saw the eyes of the other. And in that moment, he had the realization that this man was none other than himself. He was just a young boy, a young man, not even 20. And in that moment, even though it was far too late to do anything else, and it was one of those moments where it was, I either kill or be killed. In that moment, he said he realized that he could no longer be violent. He said he was given a medal for his bravery, for his activities that day. He was praised by the military. But he said in his own heart, he knew that that was not how he wanted to live and what he wanted to do. So he resigned, he gave up being in the army and dedicated his life to a life of non-harming. So that momentary seeing was the event that changed his life dramatically. He said he understands that, of course, he was young, he was following orders, he was a soldier, that was his job. He understands all of that. But he said he knew within himself that he could no longer go on in that role, and so he stopped. It takes courage. And what took even more courage, I think, was for him to come and say to all of us that this is what had occurred. Here in Israel, this is not so uncommon, of course, but in Australia, we don't hear so much about these kinds of events. And in the telling of it, of course, there was nothing but love and understanding and kindness from those who heard and listened. And so that for him was a great healing, that he no longer had to keep this a secret within himself. And so it was a wonderful moment for him of the freeing up of something within him. So our task in the Dharma is to let go of everything. It's to give up clinging anywhere. And when we do this, what seems to be so wonderful is that when there's that release, the release is to peace itself. The release is to seeing that which is empty of self-existence, but full of heart. Full of meeting one another, full of love. So emptiness is not cold and indifferent. The understanding of emptiness, if you like, is expressed as love, is expressed as compassion. It is expressed as a commitment to being a messenger of peace in this world. This is the Dharma teaching. And may each of us here, in our own way, small and big, be committed to contributing peace and harmony in this world of ours, which is surely full of way too much conflict. Let's just sit together. May all beings realize the insubstantial nature of self. May all beings understand the emptiness teachings of the Buddha Dharma. And may all beings live with a heart of peace.